Morning, everyone. Today's daf and Baba Kama's daf Nun. Thank the Lubin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf is on Zeichen Nishmat Li B'Gaviyel B'Shmuel. We are on Mem Tes Amud Aleph. We're towards the bottom of the Amud, and we have a yesterday's sugi. We have to finish up the Mei Vlados, and then we turn to today's daf. Today's daf Nun is even though we're still in the fifth parak and Baba Kama, we're going to be changing topics, changing gears with the new mission that's coming up later this morning. We're going to be starting the topic of Bor. But in the meantime, however, we have to finish up from yesterday's daf, and that's the topic of Demei Vlados. So again, a woman is injured, and she was pregnant, and as a result of the injury, so she miscarried. So what did we learn back in the Mishnah? The Mishnah taught us back on Memches, the Memches Amud Beis, that the that an injury that comes about, in other words, a miscarriage that comes about through an animal, if an animal injures her, so the... the Mishnah says it was unintended, but we learned the yesterday in yesterday's Gemara. It's not limited to that. In other words, even if the animal was intent on damaging the woman and causing the miscarriage, the owner of the animal is going to be potter from Demei Vlados. There's no assessment of Demei Vlados, and we do not assess damages over there. But if a man were to injure a woman and cause a miscarriage, so then there's an assessment of Demei Vlados. Who's entitled to this assessment of Demei Vlados? As we learned yesterday, and we learned already a couple of times, the husband. The Torah says that the husband is the recipient of the Demei Vlados. And then what we learned over the course of yesterday is in the Mishnah, machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rishim and Gamliel, exactly how to make this assessment. Tanakhama says, well, you look at what her value was if she were to go on the market. You look at her value before while she was pregnant, then you look at her value after she's pregnant, and the difference is going to be the loss, and that's going to be that's the Demei Vlados. It's going to go to the husband. To which Rishim and Gamliel says just the opposite. I think she's going to be worth more after she gives birth than before she gives birth. Before she gives birth, she's at the risk of dying. Her market value is at that point in time diminished, and only after she's given birth, where now she knows that we know that she's going to live a long life, so then her market value is actually going to go up. So Shimon Gamliel says we're going to have to try to assess the actual Demei Vlad in of itself and not the woman. So the machlokes between Tanakhama and Shimon Gamliel exactly how to make that assessment. We also learned over the course of yesterday that really, in the course of a woman getting injured and causing a miscarriage, there really are three categories of payments that we could be talking about. One, we could talk about nezek atzma. In other words, if she herself, meaning having nothing to do with her carrying a baby. In other words, if she herself was damaged, so that's nezek and that goes to her. Okay, I mentioned yesterday, the Gemara Ksuva says that the husband does get shares in that payment, but... I'm going to say it simple. That nezek goes to her because that's her bodily damage, and therefore she's entitled to the nezek. Then there is the fact that she is pregnant. Now the fact that she's pregnant means that A, she has a baby inside, she has a fetus inside, and also B, it also means that she herself has taken on baby fat. In other words, in order to house the baby, so she's going to be larger, and that is what's called, and those are two different categories. That's what's called the Demei Vlad and the Demei Shevach. Demei Vlad is talking about the actual feet itself, and Demei Shevach is just the extra girth that she had in order to house the baby. So those payments, so in terms of the Demei Vlad, that goes to the husband, and that's clear. Meaning that's what the Torah awards to the husband. What about the Demei Shevach? So at this juncture, we saw yesterday a machlokas, meaning Tanakhama and Shimon Gamliel may in fact be arguing over this very point. Tanakhama is of the opinion that the Demei Shevach also goes to the husband. The fetus, the value of the fetus goes to the husband, and the Demei Shevach also goes to the husband, at which Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying no. The Demei Vlados goes to the husband, that part's true. The Demei Shevach, Cholkin. That's divided between the husband and her. She'll get half of it, and the husband will get half of that amount. Okay, as I mentioned yesterday, not clear to me, I'm speaking now personally, not clear to me why the chalukah, why the division, why the, I would understand the position a little more fundamentally, but that's the opinion of Shimon Gamliel. We also pointed out yesterday that there were a couple of brises reflecting Shimon Gamliel's viewpoint. There were two to be specific, and the Gemara says that the two brises may be reflecting just the reality that if this is the first time that she's delivering a baby, and we don't know, don't know how she's going to do in terms of childbirth. So then the first price is in play, which is that her market value is significantly diminished if this is the first time she's giving birth. But this is not the first time she's giving birth, and we have a pretty good predictor that she's going to have a successful birth. So then the second price is in play, which is that according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, like we discussed just a moment ago, the Demei Vlados is going to go to the husband, but the Shevach Vlados is going to be split between her and her husband. We are in the Gemara in Mem Tesamad Aleph. We're towards the bottom of the Amud, and we are just doing the drushas. So Virabanan, this is where I'm going to pick up. I started this yesterday, this part. Two-thirds of the way down in Mem Tesamad Aleph. First word in the line is the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Go to the end of the line. Virabanan de Amre, Shevach Vlados Nami Labal, Mai Taima. According to the Chachamim, the husband is awarded not only the Demei Vlados, the actual value of the fetus, but also the baby fat as well, the extra girth that she took on. So both of those are awarded to the husband. Why should that be? My time kid did not. So the Gemara quotes A. Now we have the words Tanan, but probably it's Titania because it's a Braisa. Mimash Mishanema V'yasiyu L'adei Neyodeshihi Hara. Now the Torah describes a scene in which two men are fighting, and she was there, and unintentionally she got hit by one of the men, and she miscarried. And that's Yatsu Yoladeha, right? She miscarried. And then the Torah goes on to describe also that she was pregnant. Well, if she miscarried, obviously she was pregnant. And so the word hara over there is a superfluous word. So, any odeshi hara, matamalama hara, lamalacha, shevach, herayon, labal. So the Tanakhama says that extra word is there to teach us that not only is the Demei Vlados going to be awarded to the husband, shevach Vlados is also going to be awarded to the husband as well. Now, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, hi, Haram, my Darish Bey. Now, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, who disagrees, and he says that the Shevach Vlados is going to be divided between her and her husband. What does he do with the pasuk? What does he do with the drasha? He buy the chedetanya. So for that, he quotes a brayser. Rav Lozman ben Yaakov Amar LaOlam Einu Yichayev Ad Shechana Keneged Beis Harayon. In order for a person to be liable, this assessment of the Demei Vlados, a man has to hit a woman somewhere in the middle region, meaning it has to be somewhere where her bodily cavity, not the extremities. So Amar Rapapa Lo Tema Keneged Beis Harayon Mamash. And Rapapa just outlines the, again, baseball analogy, he outlines the strike zone. So in other words, the strike zone over here is, doesn't have to be Keneged Harayon Mamish, it doesn't have to be right by where the baby is sitting in her abdomen. Ela Kol Hecha Desalek Bey Shechma Lavlad. Basically, literally the words mean anywhere where heat is generated on behalf of the child. Basically, the way I would describe it is anything but the extremities. Not the arms, not the legs, but if a man hits her, or it could be a woman also, but if a man hits her anywhere within the body cavity area, so then then you would assess the Demei Vlados. La Afuka, the Gemara says, Yad V'regel D'lo. If a man were to hit her on an arm, on a leg, and she miscarries as a result of that, so Chiddush HaTorah, that she's not assessed. The one who's damaging her, obviously he pays her the Nezek, but in terms of the special Demei Vlados, if she were to miscarry, that's not going to be assessed under those circumstances. That's what Rabbi Shimon Gamliel does in terms of darshaning the Pasuk. Continuing, going back to our Mishnah says that if the woman who was hit was a convert, two types of converts, either she was a Shifcha Kanani, she was released, where de facto she becomes a convert, or somebody converts. Now we know the halacha is that prior to her having a child, she has no family members. Now she's married, and we're going to assume, and Rashi said this back in the Mishnah, that her husband also is a ger. So, and Rashi points out that's generally what happens. A ger marries a geros. So geros can marry a Yisrael, but we, in this particular case, we're discussing where the geros is married to a ger. The Shifcha Kananis is also married to an Eved Kanani who was Mishuchrar. They were freed. And so the point the Mishnah wanted to make is that in the event that there was a damage and there was a miscarriage, so the Demei Vlados over here is going to be awarded to, now, if there's a husband, so it's going to be awarded to the husband. But if there's no husband, so then who is it going to go to? So this is what we're discussing right now. Haisa Shifcha Nishachra O Gioris Pater. Ama Rabba. Now, in the Mishnah, what did we learn together? We learned that in the event that there is no husband, right, Ein La Baal, so then you give it to the husband's Yershim. Sorry, I didn't want that part of the Mishnah. Okay, shivcha v'nishachra o giyaris pater. I just want the last words of the Mishnah. In the event that she is a convert, so then it would be pater. If you look back at Rashi in the Mishnah, he explains. I'm just citing a line of the Rashi. In other words, we know that when a ger dies with no children, so then there is no next of kin. There's no estate, and so therefore, anyone who grabs it first gets to keep it. Here, I know we generally don't like awarding assailants, but here the assailant who hit and is obligated to pay the Demei Vlados, but because there's no address in terms of where it goes, and there's no estate, and there's no next of kin, so he gets to keep the money. To which now the Gemara comments on this point of the Mishnah. Amar Rabba, lo shanu elo shechava ba b'chayi hager umeis hager. Dekeven dechava ba b'chayi hager, zachubu ger. Dekeven demeis hager, zachubu min hager. So the Gemara says like this. Rabba says, we're talking about a very specific scenario in which, again, she's a convert. She's married to a convert. She was carrying her child, and in the context of our discussion, we're going to say it's her first child. So she was carrying a child, and she got hit, and a miscarriage occurred. And so that means now that Demei Vlados is going to be awarded to the husband. Now the husband dies. So now you have and the husband has no children. So now you have a scenario in which the money is there is an assessment, but there's simply no address where that money's going to go. Consequently, the assailant gets to keep the money. However, Ava, Chava balacha misas ager, zachya la ihi begavayu mechayv l'shlomei la lidida. Rabba says that in the event that, let's say, the husband died prior to the attack. So in other words, she was attacked as a widowed convert. Okay. And so in other words, obviously she's pregnant, but unfortunately her husband's no longer alive, and now she's attacked as a widowed convert. Under these circumstances, so then the Mishnah's rule will not be in play, meaning the Mishnah says the assailant gets to keep the money. In this case, no. And why not? And Rabba's argument goes like this. Because if there's no husband, so then who's the awardee of that money? Who's entitled to that money? What Rabba is now prepared to argue is that the woman herself. The woman herself now, being that there's no husband, becomes the new address in terms of where that money is going to go to. And so therefore, the woman, and she's alive, and therefore she gets to keep the money. She's in, not keep the money, but receive the money. Okay. This is Rabba's limitation of our Mishnah. So Amar Rav Chista Mar Dechi. So Rav Chista hears this, and Rav Chista's reaction is, "You have got to be kidding me!" So Atu Vladut Sari Ninhu, you're looking at this awarding this payment of Demei Vlados. You're looking at it as if it's Sarare, a bag of coins. Meaning the way you're viewing this is like any other chov, like any other obligation. And we know, if I have obligation, and if I owe him, then I'm fine. And if I don't owe him, maybe I owe her. But Demei Vlados does not work that way. This is a special assessment of the Torah in the event that a woman is hurt, damaged, through the damage caused a miscarriage. The Torah awards the husband. But it's not like a standard obligation in the Torah where, well, if there's no husband, then it goes to somebody else. It doesn't work that way. If there's a husband, he gets awarded the Demei Vlados. And if there is no husband, there is no awarding Demei Vlados. Rav Chista says it's not like your regular obligation. If the husband's there, then he is awarded the Demei Vlados. And Leisa Labal, lo. But if the husband's not there, he's not awarded. And so basically what comes out now is that we have a very basic machlokas between Rabba and Rav Chista, how to view the special assessment of Demei Vlados. Rabba views Demei Vlados like any other obligation, meaning miscarriage occurred, we're going to give a financial assessment to what that miscarriage is. If there's a husband, great, he gets the money. And if there is no husband, if he wasn't alive, then she's awarded the money. That is how Rabba views this, the assessment of Demei Vlados. To which Rav Chista says, no, you have it wrong. The way Demei Vlados works is that if there's a husband, he gets it. And if there's no husband, there is no assessment. and the assessment is a function of their being a husband. Makes for the Gemara is going to challenge now, based on the following. A man hits a woman and she miscarries. No, say nezik v'tzar leisha. So nezik and tzar go to the woman. Okay, that's basic damages, like we discussed earlier. Demei v'ladus labal, and the demei v'ladus go to the husband. And abal no sin leyoshav. Now, if the husband's no longer alive, so it goes to his estate. Ein ha isha. Now, if the woman's no longer alive, no sin leyoshaha. It goes to her. Goes to her children. We already discussed this part of the braisa earlier in the Masechta. This particular case is talking about where she was a grusha. Okay. Haisa shifcha v'shtachra o giyaris zacha. Now, if it is a woman who is a shifcha and she was freed, or she was a convert, so then zacha. Zacha, what does that mean? So presumably what it means is, like we saw back in the Mishnah, meaning the assailant gets to keep the money because there's no address in terms of where it goes. So what came out from this brisa? Basically, from the brisa, what it sounds like is that Rav Chisda's right, meaning that this assessment is only going to be assessed if there's a husband, and if there's no husband, there's just simply no assessment. So Amrei, so to that they said, Umiya difnim mas nisan. Du ukimna shechava ba b'chai hagir. Umeis hagir. Hachanami shechava ba b'chai hagir umeis hagir. So the Gemara says, well, I get...
It's not like a priest. It's a kasha of a
priest. It's a kasha...
Because it says zocha, but she does get the money. And a priest says she doesn't.
No, zocha over here means that the assailant is going to keep the money. Right, look at...
Zocha, so it's her.
Look at Rashi. Look at the bottom Rashi. Zacha hachova b'meshe b'yado. Ve'afilo achem isa tzager. Chava ba zacha ba. Okay. So what you're saying is what the Gemara is going to end up suggesting. But right now, that's what the Gemara is assuming. So the Gemara says, mi adifna... Sorry, where'd I go? So I'm sorry. Umi adifna, last two lines of Mem Tetzel Min Aleph. Umi adifna mi mas nisan. So the Gemara says, now you know, great. You read the Braisa, Kasha, wonderful. But you know what? Back up to the Mishnah. Meaning, we had basically the same point made in the Mishnah, and what do we say? We give an ukimta Mishnah. Do ukimta shechava ba b'chai agir, o meis agir. In the Mishnah, we said that when is it going to be that the assailant is going to be able to keep the money? When he attacks a woman, she miscarried, and there was a husband at the time. And then the husband died. In other words, when I say husband, I mean convert husband. And then he died. Then the assailant gets to keep the money. Hachanami shechava ba b'chai agir, o meis agir. So in the Braisa, we'll just simply say the same thing, that at the time that she was attacked and at the time she miscarried, there was a husband who was a ger, and then what happened is that he died. But in the event that at the time of the attack there was no husband, so then there simply is not going to be an assessment. That's what we'll say. Or the Gemara says, or maybe we could talk about even Achri Mises Agir, Utani Zachsa. And then in terms of the way we're going to understand the Braisa, and this is exactly what you were suggesting, the way we're going to understand the Braisa is that not Zocha meaning he's going to be Zocha, but Zachsa meaning that she's going to be Zocha. And maybe that's the right way to understand the Braisa. Lema Kitanai. Okay, so what do we have right now? We're trying to wrap our head around this assessment of Demei Vlados. The Torah awards the husband the Demei Vlados, and what we are trying to analyze is there such a thing as the money going to the woman in the event that the husband is not there? He's dead. So, Lema Kitanai. The Gemara says, perhaps this is a Machlokas Tanayim, and we read a Bryce. We're on the top of Mem Testament base. Bais Yisrael, Shenisla Zager, Venisabra Mimenu. So a Jewish woman married to a ger got pregnant, the Chavaba Bechaya Ger, and she was attacked, and no saying Demei Vlados a ger. So the husband, he's a ger, but he's entitled to the Demei Vlados. La Achamisa Sager. So, well, let's say now, Achamisa Sager after the husband has died. And so now, where does that Demei Vlados money go to? So, Tini Chada Chai, but Tini Chada Pater. So we have two brises. And the two brises are at odds with one another. One brise says Chayiv, and the other brise says Pater. So, my love to Nai Ninhu. So the Gemara says now, what are we left with? We're left with saying, Machlokis Tanayim, if there's no husband, can we redress the assessment to go to the woman? And presumably, this is exactly the machlokes between Rabba and Rav Chisda, where according to Rabba, it is a regular standard obligation where if there's no husband, it's going to go to the woman. And Rav Chisda says no. Demei Vlados is a chiddush haTorah, and it only goes to the husband. And if there's no husband, then there is no assessment. So the Gemara says, presumably, these two brises are reflecting the two opinions. So the Gemara says, L'Rabba Vadei Tanahi. So from Rabba's standpoint, he has no other move other than to say, yes, I agree. It's a machlokas tanayim. But Ella Rav Chisda mi lema tanayim. But Rav Chisda can tell you as follows. No, my position stands. The assessment is only there when there's a husband. If there's no husband, then there's no assessment. I'm good. What about the two brises that we just encountered? Lo kasha, Rabban and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. So the Gemara says, as far as the two brises are concerned, remember, we learned earlier, and yesterday's daf I reviewed in the beginning of this morning, that in the event that a woman miscarries, so the Demei Vlados goes to the husband, unequivocally. The Shvach Vlados, so that's a machlokas. Tanakama says it also goes to the husband. Rav Shimon Gamliel says it's split between the husband and the wife. That's what the Bryce is dealing with. So my ear yel acher misa filo mechaim nami isla paga mechaim. Sorry, nami isla. So the Gemara says wonderful, but you know what? This machlokas, Tanakama, Rav Shimon Gamliel, has nothing to do with whether the husband's alive or dead. Even if the husband's alive, we're still going to have the same debate. Why would the Braisa pick up the case where the husband has died? It's true even if the husband were alive. So the Gemara says like this, Paga Mechaim Isla, Paga L'Achemisa, Isle Paga. Mechaim isle paga lachemisa kula. So the Gemara says, yeah, you're right, but here's the difference. If the husband were alive, so they split the shvach vlados. If the husband's dead, she gets all of the shvach vlados. Okay, so that's why the Braisa picked that particular scenario. Ibai sema hava ha Rebbe Shimon Gamliel kan b'shvach vlados kan b'dmei vlados. And another way to explain the difference between the two positions of the Braisa we just learned is that the Braisa that says that chayev that you have to pay her, that's talking about the shvach vlados. The Braisa that says that you do not pay her, that's to the dmei vlados. Because again, the dmei vlados is only an assessment if there's a husband. But if there's no husband, then there's simply no assessment. Amre mishvach vlados l'shmei dmei vlados. So the Gemara says, wait one second. In other words, why can't we learn one assessment from the other assessment? Now, if Rav Shimon Gamliel says that she's going to get the Shvach Vlados, so presumably she also is going to get the Demei Vlados, and according to the Chachamim, shouldn't the same thing be true? Amri lo. So to which they said in the yeshiva, no, that's not the way to understand it. Shvach Vlados de Shaychi Yadda Begavai lo Zachi Behu Bekulu. Demei Vlados de lo Shaychi Yadda Begavai lo Zachi Beklal. Gemara says, look, we'll make a very simple distinction. Shvach Vlados, even if her husband's alive, she's going to get half of those payments. So she already has a hand in it. So in the event that there's no husband, so she'll get all of it. But the starting point is that she already was entitled to half. When it comes to Demei Vlados, when the husband's alive, she's entitled to zero. So it's not shaykh for her to get the Demei Vlados. So if the husband's dead, so she'll get also zero. So you can't compare Shvach Vlados to Demei Vlados. Continuing in the Gemara. The Gemara, and we're pretty much done in the Gemara with the topic of Demei Vlados. So once again, the Demei Vlados topic, just to summarize, in the event that a woman is damaged and through the damage, a miscarriage occurred, so there's a special assessment of what Demei Vlados is. Machlok is the Mishnah, how exactly you make that assessment. But a special assessment of Demei Vlados, that assessment goes to the husband. Husband is awarded that assessment. And what we've been debating and discussing over the last daf of Gemara is topics like, is this a special assessment where, in the event that there's a husband, he's going to get it. But if there's no husband, then she's going to get it. That's the machlokes between Rabba and Rav Chisda. Rabba says she'll get it. Rav Chisda says no, she won't. And that's basically the topic. And what we've also discussed was the three different categories of nezek: the nezek itself, the shvach, and the demei vlados. Okay. Before we get move on to the next mishnah, so the Gemara just has some odds and ends, if you will, about a ger. And now again, the unique nature of a ger is that when he dies, he has no, and he dies with no children, so there is no next of kin, there's no estate, and basically all of his possessions, all of his assets are hefker. And basically it's, first come, first serve. And so the Gemara now has a couple of questions. By me, Rav Yeva, Sava, Rav Nachman. Amatli b'shtar shol ger mahu. Let's say the convert comes over to a person and says, "Look, I have some mortgages, right? I lent money, and so I have paper, and that paper allows me to place a lien on the other people's properties. But you know what? It's a lot of paperwork. Do me a favor, hold them for me." So what the ger did is he deposited his notes by somebody else, and then the ger dies. So now, the holder of these notes, does he become the de facto owner of these notes? That's issue number one. By me, Rav Yeva, Saba, Rav Nachman, Hamachzik b'shtara sof shel ger mahu, man de machzik b'shtara adaita da arahu de machzik. So the Gemara says now, when holding onto it, when he was safeguarding the notes, so obviously he wasn't the owner. The ger was alive, but once the ger is dead, so now does he, without? And I assume, and I'm not sure about this, but I assume it's talking about a scenario in which he didn't make a kinyan on them. In other words, he's still simply holding the notes. So do we say adaita d'arahu d'machzik, that really what he's focused on is on the property, uva'ara halo achzik, but he didn't do a kinyan chazak on the property itself, ushtarinamilokano, but because he was focused on the property and on the piece of paper, so he didn't acquire the piece of paper. Delav daita ashtara, o dilma daiti nami ashtara. Or no. Maybe not only is he focusing on the property with this, which this paper has a lien against, but maybe he's also focusing on the paper itself. And because the paper is on his property and he's focusing on the paper, so that's enough in order for him to create a kinyan on the paper. So the answer is a somewhat sarcastic. What do you really think he's interested in paper? Meaning he's only interested in the fact that this paper has a lien against property, and it will allow him to collect the property, but he's not focused on the paper. What do you think? You think he's going to use the paper in order to cover up a small jug of his? He's not interested in the paper. Amalei latsur v'latsur. To which the answer is, no, I can make an argument that he's interested in the paper itself. And so basically he says, yes, I think that a proper acquisition was made on the paper, and he acquired the paper. That was issue number one. All right, yeah. Amar Rabba, mashkon shel Yisrael b'yad ger. Let's say you have a mashkon in the hand of a ger. So here we're talking now about an actual collateral that was used by a borrower in order to secure the loan. And the ger was actually holding the mashkon. And mashkon shel Yisrael b'yad ger, umeis hager. Now the ger dies. So ubay yisol acher v'hichzik bo. And so another Jew at that point in time, it doesn't have to be another Jew, but another person at that point in time goes over to the house of the ger and says, "Oh, great. He was holding on to the mashkon as collateral against the obligation, against the loan. But you know what? Ger's dead. I'll take the mashkon." So now, motzin oso miyado. So we take it out of his hands and we give it back to the original owner. My time at Kevan, the miss. So here this is an easy one, because the collateral doesn't belong to the ger, it's collateral, meaning he's holding it against the obligation. Once the ger dies, that's it, there's no longer an obligation. And again, the obligation is not, right, the obligation is not passed on to the next generation. There is no next generation, there's no next of kin. So therefore, the obligation disintegrates, it dissipates, and now what are you left with? The mashkon goes back to its original owner.
That's assuming the ger is not married.
Right, again, assuming that there's no family. Mashkon shel ger b'yad Yisrael. Now let's turn this around. Let's have now the mashkon of the ger being in the hand of Yisrael, meaning the ger himself took out a loan and gave collateral over to secure the loan. So umeis ger, and then the ger dies. If Yisrael acher v'echzik bo, ze kana keneg mazav, ze kana v'zeshar. Now we're discussing a very specific scenario over here in this last case, where the value of the collateral exceeded the loan amount. Okay, that's generally speaking, you don't want to give more collateral than necessary. But in this particular case, the collateral exceeded the loan amount. So now you have a Jew holding on to the collateral of the ger, and then the ger dies. So obviously, but let's spell it out, the value of the collateral up to the loan belongs to the lender. Goes without saying, but I'll say it. But let's say this particular collateral in question exceeded the value of the loan. So what about the shar? What about that difference between the loan amount, the loan value, and whatever is left in the collateral? So does the holder automatically acquire it? My first reaction would have been yes, it's on his property. So the Gemara says, not necessarily. The Gemara says somebody comes along and takes that differential, so he gets to keep it. To which the Gemara says, "Vamai." The Gemara says, that's difficult to understand. We have what's called the Kenyan Chatzer. If the collateral is on the property of the lender, and in this particular case, the borrower died and the borrower was a ger, so then I think that the entire piece of collateral should be acquired by the lender. Not only the collateral up to the loan amount, but even the additional as well. And it's on the chatzer, it's on the property of the lender. So I don't even understand why we're having a discussion. So the Gemara says, in this particular case, we're talking about even a more specific scenario in which the lender is out of town. So the Gemara says, well, I don't understand why that should make a difference. So the Gemara says that, look, a chatzer can be no better than you. You can create a kinyan if you're around, but if you're not around, you can't make a kinyan. Your chatzer can only make a kinyan if you're around, but if you're not around, your chatzer cannot make a kinyan. But to that, the Gemara ends up by saying, v'hilchasa d'leise b'chatzero, the lokana. And the Gemara concludes by saying, but it's just simply not true. Even if he's not on his property, but the collateral is on his property, so then he acquires the entirety of the collateral, not only the collateral up to the loan amount, but even the part that exceeds. And if somebody comes over and tries to take the shar, tries to take the differential, he doesn't acquire. Why? Because the person's chatzer were acquired it on his behalf. Okay.
Why didn't the Gemara ask the same question about the document? The person had the documents, the deeds of the
shibud
of the
kakuris. Right.
It's in his
chotzer.
So the chotzer should be
okay, good. That's a good question.
The kakuris.
I don't know. Okay. We are at the Mishnah. We are on Mem Tesem Beis. We're towards the bottom of the Amud and the new Mishnah. And the new topic, in which now we are switching gears in the Masechta. It's been some time. Masechta, we're on Daf Nun. We're about to start Daf Nun. And it's been some time since the beginning of the Masechta. And we spent, I would say, from a pie chart standpoint, most of the pie has been dedicated to Shur. And in this case, Shur. And Aish, a little bit of Aish. Adam really is coming up in the eighth. Huh? We discussed Adam Chavav. We discussed Adam. Adam is coming up really. The eighth parak is dedicated to a man doing damage. Although the eighth parak really is dedicated to man damaging another man. Right? We discussed earlier man damaging property. But truth of the matter is that throughout the Masechta, and then we're in the fifth parak, the middle of the fifth parak, we have not discussed. We've talked about it, it's incidentally, tangentially, but we have not discussed the Nezek of Boar, and this is where we begin right now. The Mishnah is about to begin, just so you should know. The Torah describes it, everything's in Parshas Mishpatim. All the Nezakim are in Mishpatim. This is Perek Chaf Aleph in Shmos, Parshas Mishpatim, and Pasuk Lamed Gimel, Pasuk Lamed Dal. I'm just going to acquaint ourselves with the psukim. The Torah says, "Ki yiftach ish bor, o ki yichre ish bor." If a man were to uncover a hole, or if a man were to dig a hole, v'lo yichasenu, he didn't cover it up, v'nafal shama shor chamor, and an animal falls into the pit, bal habor yishalem kesef yashiv leva alav v'ameis yelam. So the Torah goes on to describe that. It's the Baal HaBor's responsibility. He has to pay for the damages, and the mace he gets to keep. Now, that may not be to his advantage. In other words, he's right. Probably to his disadvantage. Okay, that is the psukim in Parshas Mishpatim that describes the topic of boar. Okay, so let's start with the Mishnah. Over boar b'rishus yachru piskal b'rishus rabbin. Now, you generally help us think and visualize about these gemaras. A boar doesn't have to go straight down. Okay, if a boar goes straight down, so then wherever the hole of the boar is going to be is where the rest of the boar is going to be. But you can imagine, you have to imagine over here, that the boar is on a slant, right? It can go down, it can make a left turn, meaning that there's a chance to dig into the ground and to move laterally so that you can envision these cases the Mishnah is describing. In terms of the most important feature of a boar, it's going to be the entrance point of the boar. Meaning that we're going to have boars cutting laterally into the ground so that it starts in one place and ends in another place. But really, the most significant part is the entry point, where you fall in. So, and that becomes important just in terms of helping us wrap our heads around these gemaras. So the Mishnah goes on to describe a chofer boar b'rishus yachid u'piskel l'rishus harabim. Let's say the pit was dug mostly in the rishus yachid, but the entrance was to the pit was in the rishus harabim. Oh, b'rishus harabim piskel l'rishus yachid. Or let's say opposite, it was in the rishus harabim, but the entrance was in rishus yachid. B'rishus yachid u'piskel l'rishus yachid. Let's say both the pit and the entry point are in rishus yachid. So, and even though it's Rishus Yachid Acher, so basically this pit is spanning two different properties. In all these cases, Chayav, you, the digger of the pit, are going to be liable for damages that are done in the pit. Okay. Just in general, an important point which should always be in our mind. We're discussing now a pit in a private area and a public area. We've discussed this earlier, but let's reiterate. If I have a private property and I do not allow permission to people walk on my property, okay, like generally speaking our private properties are, so then if I dig a pit on my property and there's no access to the public on my property, so then I don't have liability for damages for that. It's my property. And by you coming onto my property, you're a trespasser. So it's, and Rashi makes this point very clear in the Mishnah. You cannot assess damages for a pit that are dug on my property if I did not give access. We must, when we're talking about a pit that's in Rishus Yachid, we must be talking about a scenario in which, despite the fact that the pit's on my property, I'm allowing people to be on my property. Because without that allowance, so then there's not going to be a liability. Okay. Rashi says it here in the Mishnah. It's important to make that point. What we're learning together, however, is that even though the pit's on my property, you could have argued, which we're about to in just a moment, that the liability of boar is only for Rishus Harabim, but we're going to learn together, it's not true. The liability for a boar can even be in a Rishus Yachid, but again, with that very, with the very basic proviso that I'm allowing people to go on my property, because if I don't allow people to go on my property, so then I'm not going to be liable. Right. I think American law works differently, right? Someone falls into my pool. I don't know. Anyway.
Well, you know, if it comes to where the majority,
of right, right, correct. Even though he was trespassing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Done something to
right. Okay. Okay, so Tana Rabbanan. So after having learned the Mishnah together, we start with the Gemara. The Gemara immediately jumps into a Braisa. Hachofer bor b'rishus yachid u'piskel l'rishus harabim. So the pit itself is in the Rishus Yachid, the subterranean pit is in the Rishus Yachid, but the entrance is in the Rishus Harabim. Chayav, you will be liable. V'zeo bor ha'amor b'torah divrei Rabbi Shmuel. And Rabbi Shmuel says, and when the Torah was describing, now I read the Pesukim a couple minutes ago, when the Torah was describing a boar, that's it. Meaning the pit that where the entrance is in the Rishus Harabim. Rabbi Kiva Omer, Hifka Rishuso v'lo Hifka Baro, Zeo Bor Hamor B'Torah. Let's say Hifka Rishuso, which is what I described a moment ago. You made your property ownerless, which basically means you're allowing people to walk on your property. But the pit's still yours, meaning you dug the pit on your property, and it's your pit. So Zehu Bor Hamor B'Torah. Rabbi Kiva says, that's the pit that the Torah is describing. Okay. Funny machlokas. Meaning Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel basically looking at the psukim that we just went through together, and they're each arguing, that's it. That's the pit that the Torah describes. Okay, now, Amar Rabba. So, basically what we have to do now, over the next couple of minutes, is that we have to understand, is there machlokas going on over here in the brisa between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel? Meaning, they're both pointing to the Torah, and they're both pointing at the Pasuk, and they're both saying, this is a pit. Rabbi Shmuel is saying, it's the pit dug in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, that's what the Torah is describing. And Rabbi Kiva says, no, it's the pit dug in the Rosh Hashanah Yachid, that's what the Torah is describing. And are they arguing with one another? Is each position exclusionary to the other position? This is what we have to figure out. And if you can imagine, I'm sure you can, this is a machlokas. Exactly how to understand the machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel is a machlokas amongst the Amoraim. We start with Rabba. Amar Rabba. Bebor birshus haramim kol amar lo pligi demechayev maitam amakra ki yiftach v'chi yichre. So Rabba says like this. If the pit was dug in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, there is no debate. Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel both will agree, you're going to be liable for such a pit. And he says, and of course, because consider, the Torah says, ki yiftach and ki yichra. You expose a pit, and you dig a pit. And let's think this through. If I'm going to have a liability for just exposing a pit, of course I'm going to have a liability for digging a pit. It goes without saying. It's an easy kavachomer. So it must be that when the Torah creates a liability, Torah creates a liability not for ownership of the pit, but for the action of making the pit. That's what the Torah is driving at when the Torah says, either you expose a pit or you dig a pit. Because again, the second point is so superfluous. It's obvious. So it must be that the Torah is telling us that for creating a pit, that creates a liability. And so therefore, it has nothing to do with ownership. It has to do with everything with making the pit. So therefore, if I'm making the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, where it's an ownerless area, I'm going to be liable. And Rabbi says, and there's no debate. Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel both agree to that point. Lo nechleku, ela bebor birshuso. When the debate is existing between the Tanaim is when I make a pit in my house, in my property. Not in my house, but on my property. On private property. Top of Nun Amud Aleph. Rabbi Kiva Savar Bor Birshus and Nami Chayiv Dechsev Bal HaBor Bebor De'isle Balim Kamar. And Rabbi Kiva will tell you, even if I make a pit on my private property, and again, I allow access so that people can go onto it, and they fall into the pit, and there's damage that occurs, so then I'm going to be liable. Why? Look at the Torah. The Torah describes Bal Habor, the owner of the pit. The owner of the pit? What do you mean? The pit's in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Who's the owner? Oh, the Torah is also describing a pit dug on my property. So, Bala bor di isle balim kamarachmana. And to that, Rabbi Shmuel will say no. Rabbi Shmuel suffer bal hatakala. So, Rabbi Shmuel will tell you that when it says the bal habor, doesn't talk about ownership in the context of I have actual ownership. It means I own that damage, meaning I'm the one who created that source of damage. That's the Baal HaBor, the Baal HaTakala. Rabbi Shmuel will tell you, but the halacha of when you're liable is only when I dig a pit in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, not in the Rosh Hashanah Yachid. Quickly to summarize, according to Rabba, when you dig the pit in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, we all agree, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel agree, you're going to be liable. And when I make a pit in the Rosh Hashanah Yachid, even when allowing access to people to walk on the property, so Rabbi Kiva will tell you you're liable, and Rabbi Shmuel will tell you you are not liable. So, Ela, Mai, Ze, Bor, Hamor, Betor, Dekam, Rabbi Kiva. So the Gemara says now, comes out that according to Rabbi Kiva, you're going to be liable for a pit in Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, and you're going to be liable for a pit in Rosh Hashanah Yachid. So when the Braisa says that Rabbi Kiva pointed to the Torah and, he says, that's it. That's what the Torah is describing. According to Rabbi Kiva, there's no limitation. You're going to be liable for a pit, both in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim and the Rosh Hashanah Yachid. Ze, Bor, She, Pasach ba'akas of tchila litzashlamim. So all Rabbi Kiva meant was that this is a pit that the Torah talks about in terms of remuneration, in terms of when you have to pay back. But the truth is that according to Rabbi Kiva, you're going to be liable both for a pit in a Rosh Hashanah Yachid and Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Ad Khan, that takes us to Rabba's understanding of the machlokas. According to Rabba, you dig a pit in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel says both say you're going to be liable. If I dig a pit in the Rosh Hashanah Yachid, Rabbi Kiva says you're liable, Rabbi Kiva says you are going to be exempt. Rabbi Akiva says you're liable. All right, and Rabbi Shmuel says you're going to be exempt. Okay. Rav Yosef Amar, here we go, round two. Rav Yosef Amar, Bebor Bershus Yachid Kulam Lo Pligid Mechayev. So Rav Yosef is going to go the other direction. If you dig a pit in your own private property, again, allowing access for people to go onto your property, because without that, you're not going to be liable. But if you dig a pit in your property, so then they both, Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel, will tell you that you're liable. My time up, Bal Habor, Amar Rachmana. But Bor Diyislei Bal Maskinan. Because the Torah calls it the Bal Habor. You can only be an owner for a pit on your property. So there, no argument. The debate is going to be when the pit is in a Rishus HaRabim. Rabbi Shmuel Savar Bor Rishus HaRabim Nami Chayv Dechzi Ki Yiftach V'chi Yechra. Rabbi Shmuel will tell you're going to be liable because, again, the Torah says exposing a pit or digging a pit. And we're going to make the argument that we made just a couple of minutes earlier. Ima Psicha Chayv Al Kriya Lo Kol Shekein. So Elo Sha'al Iske Psicha Val Iske Kriya Ba'alo. Again, the Kav HaChomer tell me that if I'm liable for exposing, I'm certainly going to be liable for digging. Must be that the Torah is driving at the idea that for making a pit, I'm going to be liable, even though I'm not the owner of the property, and therefore I'm going to be chayv even a rishus harabim. And Rabbi Kiva will tell you no. I don't really think it's a Kav HaChomer. Because the ikas of Rechman Ki Yiftah Chav Amina Poseachu Desagile Bikisui. I might have thought like this. If I expose a pit, how do I undo the problem? By taking the lid and putting it back over the pit. However, Kora lo sagi le bikisu had the time late. But if I dig a pit, you might have thought that covering it is going to be insufficient. The only way to undo digging a pit is to fill it in again. So therefore, the Torah has to go out of its way to give me both sides. V'kas v'rachmane ki yechre. And let's go in the other direction. Let's say the Torah only talked about digging a pit. So hava amina kri Yehuda by kisui. If I dig a pit, so then I'm going to have to cover it. Mishum de avan maisa, because I created the pit. Ava posech de lo avan maisa. But if all I'm doing is just exposing a pit, I'm not the one who dug the pit. All I did was just expose it. Ahav amina. I might have thought, therefore, that you're not going to be liable for exposure. So, ema kisui namilo bai kamash malan. That's why the Torah has to give me both scenarios. So, what Rabbi Kiva is going to argue is that it's not a kav chomer, and it's not, and the Torah needed to write both. So, ve'elamai zeo bor hamar b'torah dekamar Rabbi Shmuel. So, now that it comes out according to Rav Yosef, digging a pit in the Rishus HaYachid, everyone's going to agree that you're going to be liable. Digging a pit in the Rishus HaRabim, Rabbi Shmuel says liable, and Rabbi Akiva says exempt. So now it comes out that according to Rabbi Shmuel, you're always liable. So if according to Rabbi Shmuel, you're always going to be liable, why does he say Zehu? Like that's what the Torah is describing. And again, the Gemara says Zehu, Borsha Pasach Bo, Kasuf Tchila, L'Nizakin. So the Gemara says, well, all Rabbi Shmuel meant by the Zehu is that this is what the Torah was describing by Nezek, but not limited to that particular case. Okay. So where do we stand right now? Machlokas, Rabba, and Rav Yosef in terms of how to understand the parameters of the Machlokas between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Shmuel. According to Rabba, digging a pin in the Rishus Rabbim, everyone agrees they're going to be liable. The Machlokas is going to be when you dig it in the Rishus Yachid. According to Rav Yosef, when you dig in the Rishus Yachid, everyone's going to say you're liable. The Machlokas is when I dig in the Rishus Rabbim. Meitzvei, the Gemara now is going to challenge based on the following Braisa. Let's go through the first one. Hachofer bor b'rishus harabim apitzchol b'rishus yachid pater. If I dig a pit in a rishus harabim and the entrance into the rishus yachid, remember I said this in the Mishnah. I'll say it again. The defining moment of a pit is going to be the entry point. So if the entry point is in the rishus yachid, so effectively this is a pit in the rishus yachid. V'af apisha and rishai lasos kain. Now, the Braisa opens up by saying that if you do so, you're going to be pater. Meaning because the entry point is in the Rishus HaYachid. Now, v'afa pishen rashai lasos kain. Now, really, you shouldn't be doing this. Because, what have you done? You dug up, the opening to the pit is in the Rishus HaYachid. Which, according to the opening of the Braisa, that's fine. Problem is that the pit then went not straight down, but the pit cut laterally, and the pit went under the Rishus HaRabim. And basically what you're doing now is you're creating instability in the infrastructure. Because the Rishus HaRabim people assume it's on standing on good on solid ground. And now by creating a hole underneath the Rishus HaRabim, you're creating, obviously, fragility in the infrastructure. So, Ein Rishus HaRabim says, Kein Lefisha Ein Osin Chalal Tachas Rishus HaRabim. So, this is a strong common sense point, but You can't do that. You can't compromise the infrastructure of the Rishus HaRabim. HaChofer Bor HaShechon HaMa'ar is B'Rishus HaYachid U'Pitzchol HaRishus HaRabim. But then the Brisa says something which is confounding. The Brisa then says, you know, if you dig a pit and you open the Rishus HaYachid and it goes into the Rishus HaRabim, you're going to be chayiv. You're going to be liable. What? The opening of the Brisa says you're potter. Now the Brisa says you're chayev. V'achover boros b'rishus ha'yachid asmuch l'rishus ha'rabim. So, and if you dig a pit, a trench, in the Rishus ha'yachid, but it buttresses right up to the Rishus ha'rabim, could go in Eila achofer and l'ushin. Now, back then, you needed to dig a little bit in order to create some sort of foundation for the house. So it's understood that you can dig in order to make the supporting supporting beams for the house. So pata, under those circumstances, you're going to be pata. Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda, mechayv ashiyas mechitza sara. According to Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda, even if I'm digging for the purposes of creating a foundation, either I make a wall so that people don't fall into the trench, or I have to recess it back into my property at least. At least four tefachim. I have to recess it into my property. Okay. Taima de leushin. Halav leushin chayev. So the Gemara says, now, for purposes of making a foundation, fine. Otherwise, you're going to be liable. So, hamani. So what just happened? The opening of the Brisa says, over digging a pit in the Rishus HaYachid, potter. The end of the Brisa says, digging a pit in the Rishus HaYachid, for foundation purposes, it's fine, but otherwise, you're going to be liable. Obviously, the Reisha and the Seifa are not in agreement with one another. Now, Bishlam al-Rabba, Reisha, Rabbi Shmuel, V'Seifa, Rabbi Akiva. So, according to Rabba, it actually works out. Because the opening of the Brisa is Rabbi Shmuel, and the end of the Brisa is Rabbi Akiva. And so, according to Rabba, it would work out. Allah, Rabbi Yosef, Bishlam, V'Seifa, Divrei HaKol, Reisha, Mani, La Rabbi Shmuel, V'La Rabbi Akiva. But according to Rabbi Yosef, who says that a digging a hole in a Rishus HaYachid is going to be liable according to everybody, you have no way of explaining the first part of the Brisa. Because the first part of the Brisa says, by digging a hole in the Rishus HaYachid, you're going to be exempt. So, Amar lecha Rav Yosef, Kula divrei hakol hi, Reisha shelo hifkir, lo rishusa v'lo baro. So the Gemara says, no, maybe the entire Brisa is going like divrei hakol, it's going according to everybody. And as far as the opening of the Brisa that says that digging a hole in your Rishus HaYachid, you're going to be exempt, that's talking about a scenario in which you dug a hole in your property and you allowed nobody onto your property. Meaning, to your property, it's private property. And there's no access point for people to walk into your property. Under those circumstances, like we said back in the Mishnah, like we're saying again, if it's your property and you do not grant permission for people to go on your property, so then you will not have liability for a ditch on that property. That's what the opening of the Brisa is dealing with. And then as far as the rest of the Brisa is concerned, divrei hakol. Meaning, because according to Rav Yosef, once you dig a ditch in a Rishus HaYachid and there's access for people to go there, you're going to be liable. That's the ditch the Torah describes. Rishus HaRabim, okay, that's a machlokas. Okay. Am Rav Ashi hashadu kimta l'Rav Yosef l'divrei hakol l'Rav Nami lo took mekitanai. So and the Gemara just has one more point on this Brisa. You know, we did such a good job explaining the Brisa according to Rav Yosef, where the Brisa is consistent. You know what? Let's do the same thing for Rav as well. Medireisha Rabbi Shmuel sefer nami Rabbi Shmuel. Now the opening of the Brisa is Rabbi Shmuel, because Rabbi Shmuel will tell you that you're exempt for digging a hole in a Rishus HaYachid. And you know what? The same thing is true regarding the end of the Brisa as well. V'tam delushin halav delushin chayav. So the Gemara says, now, what did the Brisa say? If you're digging it for foundation purposes, so then you're off the hook. Otherwise, you're on the hook. So the Gemara says, "Kigon to arva chavucha l'rishus harabim." That's because when you started digging for foundation purposes, you actually encroached into the area of the Rishus HaRabim. That's why the Brisa tells you that you have liability. So, but otherwise, if your foundational holes were strictly on your property, so then the Brisa would actually agree that you would be exempt. You would be putter. Okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up. So again, we started topic today of digging a hole and creating damages through the digging of the hole. So what we have in the Mishnah is, Mishnah says it does not matter where the opening of the pit is. We have a Brisa, Machlok, Shin, Rabbi Kiv, and Rabbi Shmuel. And then, the rest of today, we went over a Machlok between Rabbi and Rabbi Yosef in terms of what exactly are the parameters of that Machlokas. Rabbi tells you that if you dig it in a Rishus HaRabim Kuli Alma, everyone would say you're Chayav. The Machlokas is only when you dig in the Rishus Yachid. And Rabbi Yosef goes the other way. If I dig in the Rishus Yachid, everyone says you're going to be Chayav. Only when I dig in the Rishus HaRabim, then we have a Machlokas between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva.